Chapter 15. Leave, if he had it in his power. Apostrophe, possibly you are correct in that belief. Apostrophe, said the gray-haired gentleman after a short reflection. I am inclined to think you are. Apostrophe, why then? Apostrophe, replied the other, the good in this state of existence preponderates over the bad. Let miscalled philosophers tell us what they will. If our affections be tried, our affections are our consolation and comfort, and memory, however sad, is the best and purest link between this world and a better. But come, I'll tell you a story of another kind. Apostrophe, after a very brief silence, the merry-faced gentleman sent round the punch, and glancing slyly at the fastidious lady, who seemed desperately apprehensive that he was going to relate something improper, began, the Baron of Krogswig, the Baron von Kildwithout, of Krogswig in Germany, was as likely a young baron as you would wish to see. I needn't say that he lived in a castle, because that's of course. Neither need I say that he lived in an old castle, for what German baron ever lived in a new one? There were many strange circumstances connected with this venerable building, among which, not the least startling and mysterious were, that when the wind blew, it rumbled in the chimneys, or even howled among the trees, in the neighboring forest, and that when the moon shone, she found her way through certain small loopholes in the wall, and actually made some parts of the wide halls and galleries quite light, while she left others in gloomy shadow. I believe that one of the baron's ancestors, being short of money, had inserted a dagger in a gentleman who called one night to ask his way, and it was supposed that these miraculous occurrences took place in consequence. And yet I hardly know how that could have been either, because the baron's ancestor, who was an amiable man, felt very sorry afterwards for having been so rash, and laying violent hands upon a quantity of stone and timber which belonged to a weaker baron, built a chapel as an apology, and so took a receipt from heaven, in full of all demands. Talking of the baron's ancestor puts me in mind of the baron's great claims to respect, on the score of his pedigree. I am afraid to say, I am sure, how many ancestors the baron had. But I know that he had a great many more than any other man of his time, and I only wish that he had lived in these latter days, that he might have had more. It is a very hard thing upon the great men of past centuries, that they should have come into the world so soon, because a man who was born 300 or 400 years ago, cannot reasonably be expected to have had as many relations before him, as a man who is born now. The last man, whoever he is, and he may be a cobbler, or some low vulgar dog for aught we know, will have a longer pedigree than the greatest nobleman now alive. And I contend that this is not fair. Well, but the Baron von Kildwithout of Krogswig. He was a fine swarthy fellow, with dark hair and large mustachios, who rode a hunting in clothes of Lincoln green, with russet boots on his feet, and a bugle slung over his shoulder like the guard of a long stage. When he blew this bugle, 24 other gentlemen of inferior rank, in Lincoln green a little coarser, and russet boots with a little thicker soles, turned out directly. And away galloped the whole train, with spears in their hands like lacquered area railings, to hunt down the boars, or perhaps encounter a bear. In which latter case the baron killed him first, and greased his whiskers with him afterwards. This was a merry life for the Baron of Krogswig, and a merrier still for the Baron's retainers, who drank Rhine wine every night till they fell under the table, and then at the bottles on the floor, and called for pipes. Never were such jolly, roistering, rollicking, merry-making blades, as the jovial crew of Krogswig. But the pleasures of the table, or the pleasures of under the table, require a little variety. Especially when the same 25 people sit daily down to the same board, to discuss the same subjects, and tell the same stories. The baron grew weary, and wanted excitement. He took to quarreling with his gentlemen, and tried kicking 2 or 3 of them every day after dinner. This was a pleasant change at first, but it became monotonous after a week or so, and the Baron felt quite out of sorts, and cast about, in despair, for some new amusement. One night, after a day's sport in which he had outdone Nimrod or Gillingwater, and slaughtered another fine bear, and brought him home in triumph, the Baron von Kieldwithout sat moodily at the head of his table, eyeing the smoky roof of the hall with a discontented aspect. He swallowed huge bumpers of wine, but the more he swallowed, the more he frowned. The gentleman who had been honored with the dangerous distinction of sitting on his right and left, imitated him to a miracle in the drinking, and frowned at each other. "I will," cried the Baron suddenly, smiting the table with his right hand, and twirling his mustache with his left. "Fill to the Lady of Grogzwig." The 24 Lincoln Greens turned pale, with the exception of their 24 noses, which were unchangeable. "I said to the Lady of Grogzwig," repeated the Baron, looking round the board. "To the Lady of Grogzwig," shouted the Lincoln Greens, and down their 24 throats went 24 imperial pints of such rare old hock, that they smacked their 48 lips, and winked again. "The fair daughter of the Baron von Swillenhausen," said Kieldwithout, condescending to explain. "We will demand her in marriage of her father, ere the sun goes down tomorrow. If he refuse our suit, we will cut off his nose." A hoarse murmur arose from the company. Every man touched, first the hilt of his sword, and then the tip of his nose, with appalling significance. What a pleasant thing filial piety is to contemplate! If the daughter of the Baron von Swillenhausen had pleaded a preoccupied heart, or fallen at her father's feet, and corned them in salt tears, or only fainted away, and complimented the old gentleman in frantic ejaculations, the odds are 100 to 1, but Swillenhausen Castle would have been turned out at window, or rather the Baron turned out at window, and the castle demolished. The damsel held her peace, however, when an early messenger bore the request of von Kieldwithout next morning, and modestly retired to her chamber, from the casement of which she watched the coming of the suitor and his retinue. She was no sooner assured that the horseman with the large mustachios was her proffered husband than she hastened to her father's presence, and expressed her readiness to sacrifice herself to secure his peace. The venerable Baron caught his child to his arms, and shed a wink of joy. There was great feasting at the castle that day. The 24 Lincoln Greens of von Kieldwithout exchanged vows of eternal friendship with 12 Lincoln Greens of von Swillenhausen, and promised the old Baron that they would drink his wine till all was blue, meaning probably until their whole countenances had acquired the same tint as their noses. Everybody slapped everybody else's back when the time for parting came, and the Baron von Kieldwithout and his followers rode gaily home. For 6 mortal weeks, the bears and boars had a holiday. The houses of Kieldwithout and Swillenhausen were united, the spears rusted, and the Baron's bugle grew hoarse for lack of blowing. Those were great times for the 24, but, alas! Their high and palmy days had taken boots to themselves, and were already walking off. "My dear," said the Baroness. "My love," said the Baron. "Those coarse noisy men, which, ma'am?" said the Baron, starting. The Baroness pointed, from the window at which they stood, to the courtyard beneath, where the unconscious Lincoln Greens were taking a copious stirrup cup, preparatory to issuing forth after a boar or two. "My hunting train, ma'am," said the Baron. "Disband them, love," murmured the Baroness. "Disband them," cried the Baron, in amazement. "To please me, love," replied the Baroness. "To please the devil, ma'am," answered the Baron. Whereupon the Baroness uttered a great cry, and swooned away at the Baron's feet. What could the Baron do? He called for the lady's maid, and roared for the doctor, and then, rushing into the yard, kicked the 2 Lincoln Greens who were the most used to it, and cursing the others all round, bade them go, but never mind where. I don't know the German for it, or I would put it delicately that way. It is not for me to say by what means, or by what degrees, some wives manage to keep down some husbands as they do, although I may have my private opinion on the subject, and may think that no member of Parliament ought to be married, inasmuch as 3 married members out of every 4 must vote according to their wives' consciences, if there be such things, and not according to their own. All I need say, just now, is, that the Baroness von Kieldwithout somehow, or other acquired great control over the Baron von Kieldwithout, and that, little by little, and bit by bit, and day by day, and year by year, the Baron got the worst of some disputed question, or was slyly unhorsed from some old hobby, and that by the time he was a fat hearty fellow of 48 or thereabouts, he had no feasting, no revelry, no hunting train, and no hunting nothing in short that he liked, or used to have, and that, although he was as fierce as a lion, and as bold as brass, he was decidedly snubbed and put down, by his own lady, in his own castle of Krogswig. Nor was this the whole extent of the Baron's misfortunes. About a year after his nuptials, there came into the world a lusty young baron, in whose honor a great many fireworks were let off, and a great many dozens of wine drunk. But next year there came a young baroness, and next year another young baron, and so on, every year, either a baron or baroness, and one year both together, until the baron found himself the father of a small family of 12. Upon every one of these anniversaries, the venerable Baroness von Swillenhausen was nervously sensitive for the well-being of her child, the Baroness von Kieldwithout, and although it was not found that the good lady ever did anything material towards contributing to her child's recovery, still she made it a point of duty to be as nervous as possible at the castle of Krogswig, and to divide her time between moral observations on the Baron's housekeeping, and bewailing the hard lot of her unhappy daughter. And if the Baron of Krogswig, a little hurt and irritated at this, took heart, and ventured to suggest that his wife was at least no worse off than the wives of other barons, the Baroness von Swillenhausen begged all persons to take notice that nobody but she sympathized with her dear daughter's sufferings. Upon which, her relations and friends remarked that to be sure she did cry a great deal more than her son-in-law, and that if there were a hard-hearted brute alive, it was that Baron of Krogswig. The poor Baron bore it all, as long as he could, and when he could bear it no longer lost his appetite and his spirits, and sat himself gloomily and dejectedly down. But there were worse troubles yet in store for him, and as they came on, his melancholy and sadness increased. Times changed. He got into debt. The Krogswig coffers ran low, though the Swillenhausen family had looked upon them as inexhaustible, and just when the Baroness was on the point of making a 13th addition to the family pedigree, von Kieldwithout discovered that he had no means of replenishing them. "I don't see what is to be done," said the Baron. "I think I'll kill myself." This was a bright idea. The Baron took an old hunting knife from a cupboard hard by, and having sharpened it on his boot, made what boys call an offer at his throat. "Hem," said the Baron, stopping short. "Perhaps it's not sharp enough." The Baron sharpened it again, and made another offer, when his hand was arrested by a loud screaming among the young barons and baronesses, who had a nursery in an upstairs tower with iron bars outside the window, to prevent their tumbling out into the moat. "If I had been a bachelor," said the Baron sighing, "I might have done it 50 times over, without being interrupted. Hallo! Put a flask of wine and the largest pipe in the little vaulted room behind the hall." One of the domestics, in a very kind manner, executed the Baron's order in the course of half an hour or so, and von Kieldwithout, being apprised thereof, strode to the vaulted room, the walls of which, being of dark shining wood, gleamed in the light of the blazing logs which were piled upon the hearth. The bottle and pipe were ready, and, upon the whole, the place looked very comfortable. "Leave the lamp," said the Baron. "Anything else, my lord?" inquired the domestic. "The room," replied the Baron. The domestic obeyed, and the Baron locked the door. I'll smoke a last pipe, said the Baron, and then I'll be off. So, putting the knife upon the table till he wanted it, and tossing off a goodly measure of wine, the Lord of Grogzwick threw himself back in his chair, stretched his legs out before the fire, and puffed away. He thought about a great many things, about his present troubles and past days of bachelorship, and about the Lincoln Greens, long since dispersed up and down the country, no one knew whither. With the exception of two who had been unfortunately beheaded, and four who had killed themselves with drinking. His mind was running upon bears and boars, when, in the process of draining his glass to the bottom, he raised his eyes, and saw, for the first time, and with unbounded astonishment, that he was not alone. No, he was not. For, on the opposite side of the fire, there sat with folded arms a wrinkled hideous figure, with deeply sunk and bloodshot eyes, and an immensely long cadaverous face, shadowed by jagged and matted locks of coarse black hair. He wore a kind of tunic of a dull bluish color, which, the Baron observed, on regarding it attentively, was clasped or ornamented down the front with coffin handles. His legs, too, were encased in coffin plates, as though in armor, and over his left shoulder he wore a short dusky cloak, which seemed made of a remnant of some pall. He took no notice of the Baron, but was intently eyeing the fire. "Halloa!" said the Baron, stamping his foot to attract attention. "Halloa!" replied the stranger, moving his eyes towards the Baron, but not his face or himself. "What now? What now?" replied the Baron, nothing daunted by his hollow voice. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.